Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
We've talked about Dogen a little bit before and how exquisite but also very difficult to comprehend the way he writes, the way he expresses himself. Now, in case you don't know, Dogen is one of the more famous Zen masters. He lived about 600 years ago. And he wrote a treatise called Being Time. So daylight savings time reminded me of being time. Now, the way that I understand it, there are two types of time. There's objective time. That's the time that's marked by the movement of the sun or now by the clock or a watch. That's objective. It's the same for everybody. Now, you can say, well, but if you don't set the clock right or all that kind of stuff. But basically, there is a clock somewhere in the world that marks objective time. And to varying degrees, the clocks and watches that we have are corresponding to that, and that's objective time. There's another version of time, which is subjective time. And subjective time is you go to a class, and the teacher is boring as all hell. So even though the class is 50 minutes, subjectively, it seems like 3 hours. On the other hand, you go out for dinner with a friend and you have a wonderful time, but you only have an hour to spend. Well, how many times have you had the experience where, boy, that hour flew by? Well, that's subjective time. So daylight savings time is sort of an interesting experience. And so just the question would be, did you experience it objectively or subjectively, the change in time? Most of you know this, but the tradition that we live in, function in as Zen students, is the Maizumi lineage. And Taizen Maizumi came to this country from Japan and began living in Los Angeles. And from that set up a Zen practice, which grew and grew and now has many of his students who have received Dharma transmission. Two of the more well-known are Bernie Glassman and Peter Matheson. But there are many more. One of those teachers is Oroshi Kennedy, who passed on the Dharma to me. So he's my father, and Maizumi is my grandfather. So this is typically how it works in the different traditions. It's passed down by what's called Dharma transmission through years and centuries. Now, the Maizumi lineage is the coming together of the Soto tradition and the Rinzai tradition. And typically they're referred to as the Soto school is referred to as the gradual school, and the Rinzai school is referred to as the sudden school. Soto does not use koans. It's created around sitting and shikantaza. And the Rinzai school is founded on koans, and the like that is realization. Whereas in the Soto school, getting to that same is gradual. Now, over time, these two have mixed together. And so the Maizumi lineage is really now a blending of Rinzai and Soto. Now, many students in this lineage study koans. And for those of us who have studied koans, there are four books of koans that are the core texts for our koan study. The first is called the Gateless Gate, also called the Mumonkan, and that contains 48 koans. And that's the first book of koans that we use. And those koans are to help us break the lock of duality that we live under. Right, so those are called entry koans. And their mission is to break us free from seeing the world as two and missing the fact that it's also one. The universe, I should say, not the world. Then the second book is the Blue Cliff Record, also known as the Hekigan Roku, and that contains 100 koans. And then the Book of Equanimity, also called the Book of Serenity, contains another 100 koans. And then the Transmission of the Light, or the Denku Roko, contains 52 koans. And the koans get successively, I don't want to use the word deeper, but they fine-tune the initial insight, develop that insight, and allow the insight to become more and more clear. And then after completing these books, there are specific additional koans which students may be assigned. And those are usually assigned based on the student's temperament. You know, so the teacher picks different koans to help, based on the temperament of the student, refine his understanding, refine his experience. So as you can imagine, it takes years to complete all of these koans. Yet even if we complete all of these koans, or for that matter, all of those that have ever been recorded, or even if we have never entered formal koan study at all, there is no end to koan study. As long as we are alive, whether we know it or not, we are working with koans. And that is that life is constantly presenting us with experiences and circumstances which, as they present themselves, seem perplexing, incomprehensible, crazy, and unresolvable. Yet if we stay with them, if we let ourselves surrender our preconceptions and preferences, these experiences can take us deeper, allow us to see things with a fresh perspective, and teach us things that we never knew about ourselves or about life itself. In koan study, faced with so many koans, really all we can do is take one koan at a time, and immerse ourselves in it, and let it teach us all that it can. Then we move on to the next koan, and then the next. And this is also a good prescription for living life. You know, they say in AA, one day at a time, and in Zen practice, we say one moment at a time. We take one moment at a time, and immerse ourselves totally in that moment. Our practice is always just this moment, right now. This sound, that's this moment. So our practice is always just this moment. So what are the ingredients of this moment? How can we use these ingredients to wake up so our practice never ends, whether we become enlightened or not? Even after enlightenment, there are still koans. There is still work to be done. And that work lasts a lifetime. Now, there's a classic koan about that. And the koan starts out with the question, what do you do when you get to the top of the 100-foot pole? And the 100-foot pole is a metaphor for our practice leading up to the insight that we have about the oneness of the universe. So once anybody of us finally gets to that point where we have that experience, the next part of this question is, you keep climbing the pole. You keep climbing, and that keep climbing goes on forever. Flowing water provides a beautiful metaphor for the power of living moment to moment. Water doesn't have a goal, such as, I am practicing to become enlightened. It moves moment by moment according to circumstances. Also, flowing water is unperturbed by the obstacles it encounters. It just flows relentlessly, patiently, moment to moment to moment. The Grand Canyon in Arizona was carved by the Colorado River over a period of 6 million years, one moment at a time. Yet if we go down to the river and hold water from it in our hands, it's impossible to imagine that it has the power to create a Grand Canyon. We are like the Colorado, like flowing water. We also have unimaginable power. We sit day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, slowly, patiently, relentlessly, eroding all of our self-centered constructs and projection, those that we have created about ourselves and about the world. And in this process, we reveal our true nature. Our true nature, which has been here all the time. So regarding Zen practice, the Colorado River didn't step back and say, damn, I'm only half finished, or I'll never create the Grand Canyon. It simply and unselfconsciously kept flowing, moment after moment after moment. Damn, I'm only half finished, or I'll never create the Grand Canyon. Our concepts, our thoughts, that if we invite them in entertainment, can interfere with our practice. So when they come to the door, say good morning and close the door. It's also true, however, that we are human, and as such, we have human reactions and feelings: frustration, discouragement, impatience, jealousy, anger. It is normal that these difficulties arise in our practice. In a way, we can embrace these responses as koans, seeing what they have to teach us, staying with them and allowing their truth to be revealed moment by moment, remembering the wonderful teaching of flowing water. So this is from a poem called From Moving Water, and I'm just taking the first and last lines from the poem. When you do things from your soul, you feel a river moving within you, a joy. There is a moving palace that floats in the air, with balconies and clear water flowing through, infinity everywhere, yet contained under a single tent. Thank you.